All right, clap it.
Butterscotch
shenanigans. Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 138 of Coffee with Butterscotch, the game dev comedy podcast of Butterscotch Shenanigans. I'm Seth, and I'm the James programmer.
I'm Adam, and I'm the eater of mini eggs.
I'm Sam, and I'm the goose chaser.
I was just completely thrown off because Seth has only ever been the games programmer
for
300 episodes.
I wanted to see what happened. Yeah. Now I program James.
Yeah, who's this
James? James is our new intern,
mm-hmm.
who is a robot.
Yep.
So I program James, James programs the games.
That seems a little indirect.
It's a little convoluted, mm-hmm. but yeah. You know, the thing about James is James feels no pain. James does not sleep. James is an unstoppable force.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So now James just needs to learn how to make the games,
uh-huh.
and then we're good.
He just needs to be able to do
it. Right now, he just doesn't stop. But what he does, I don't know. I don't know what he's doing.
Mm-hmm. So to get him to start stopping. Well, no, to continue not stopping.
Continue not stopping, but doing the thing that matters and not mm-hmm. doing whatever he's currently doing.
Classic James.
Classic James. Also, this is a show where we talk about life, business, and working in the games industry. Today is February 19th.
February?
2018. I like that pronunciation.
Yeah, it sounds delightful.
Yeah.
You need to do it like a craft beer station.
Artisanal porters.
Mm-hmm. February, beer it up.
Yep.
That's the slogan of February. Also, before we get started, we have a warning. Anything could happen on this show. There's going to be profanity and adult themes, as well as mature topics.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mature.
Mature is just the grossest way to say that word.
Mature.
Yeah. We've talked about this before. Not into it.
We'll have some human maturity.
Human. Mature. All right, let's get on to some news.
What we got?
First up, happy Chinese New Year. Mm-hmm. It is the year of the dog.
Which is good because it's 2018.
Dogs are great.
Dogs are great, and they also don't give a fuck.
2018. Who gives a fuck?
Mm-hmm. Poop wherever you want.
Is it who gives a fuck?
Yeah.
Or stop fucking around. Well, it's probably both
of those. They're one and the same.
I forgot to see this slogan.
They're two sides of the same coin ball.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
2018, year of the dog. Speaking of Chinese New Year, what happened? So Adam and Sam both are part of Chinese families.
Mm-hmm. We are.
Yeah.
Via in-laws and stuff.
So we did on Friday night, we had a classic annual dumpling making party, where basically our house turns into a dumpling factory.
Dumplefest 2018.
Essentially. And our dog was there, and at one point he got a shitload of flour on his face, but nice. All of us had our hands covered in meat and stuff, so we couldn't do anything about it. So
that
it
was just his life now, but I assume he didn't give a fuck.
He was probably like, hey, why don't you bring one of those meat hands over here and clean off my face.
Like, I see what you're doing, dog. But yeah, so we had our friends come over, and we essentially become this dumpling assembling automaton together. We Voltron and assembled
Dumple Squad.
And so very fun. And the problem was that, so I made the dough for it. And usually what you do with dumplings, because they're kind of a pain to make, is that you go buy dough from the store. And it comes in these little perfectly flat, super thin slices, kind of like a tortilla, but super tiny.
Mm.
But I made it myself. And so Diana, my wife, had to roll them out. So she's over there rolling away. And the problem is you just can't get them as thin as you're going to get in the store, right? So these are going to be some hefty dumplings.
What's the technique that you would do to get them that thin?
You know, I have no freaking idea. I think you have to use a machine.
You just take something real heavy and you just hit it repeatedly for hours.
Like a dog or something.
No, dogs aren't heavy enough. Well, dogs are heavy enough, but they're not flat enough, you know?
That's true. They got unless too many round edges.
Yeah, unless you get like Now, pit bulls don't have flat enough faces, like a pug maybe.
To just headbutt.
But they're too little. Yeah.
Well, so the whole thing is that you want to eat as many dumplings as possible, because a dumpling is a metaphorical bag of money.
Yeah.
Okay. As my wife tells me. So you want to basically eat all the dumplings as possible to start Chinese New Year, because that is a sign of how wealthy you're going to be that mm-hmm. year. Okay.
Because just like in the non-metaphorical sense, the more money you eat, the wealthier you will be.
Okay, so before this story continues, I have to get something off my chest here.
What is it?
So,
is it a dumpling?
No, there's a dumpling on my chest. So there's something that I've never quite been able to figure out is, you know, here in the U.S., we have traditions that we do, mm-hmm. but none of them really mean that much. You know what I mean? Like, you get together on Thanksgiving and you eat a shitload. Why do you do that? Because, you know, you just do it, mm-hmm. right? But there's no... There's no sort of deeper meaning, right?
There's not a metaphor for what your year's
going
to
be. You're not doing anything
it's
for
an omen.
Yeah, there's no omens, right?
Now, what about Groundhog Day? What are you talking about? We look at a groundhog and then we're like,
but
oh
who
God.
Actually celebrates?
Almost nobody even knows when it happens.
Yeah. It just happens, right? And like, so everything is just like, we got Valentine's Day, we got, you know, we got Easter, we got Christmas that happens, Thanksgiving, mm-hmm. all these.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, all of our holidays are just times where you have to buy things for people
you buy
or
stuff,
you get in trouble.
But it doesn't mean anything, right? Yeah. I was talking to my wife's from India, and she was explaining to me how apparently this is a thing that happens in India is, in different countries or in different states, it happens in different ways. But every year, superstitious married women will go and marry a tree.
Okay.
They go and they have a miniature wedding ceremony with a tree.
Mm-hmm. So now, when you say miniature, this is by
Indian
standards?
It's not like so an 800-person event.
But then what does that actually mean?
I don't know. I don't know the full details. I know it's not like a... You know, like a legit.
You just go find a branch and slap a ring on it.
There's a specific kind of tree, and you go marry that tree.
Okay.
And then you do that because then that somehow sort of refreshes your seven lifetime sort of lock in with your current spouse, right? Because there's that.
By having an extra.
And something about the tree.
Floral
thing.
Affair.
Extra. Well, I mean, trees last a long time.
Yeah.
Right.
And there's like, and there's all kinds of these interesting things that they have going on with crows and like rice balls and all these things. And like you guys are talking about dumplings that represent money.
Right.
Like, what do we got going on?
We just got gluttony and consumerism, you know?
Yeah. It's unfortunate because the legacy we have here is not, it's not super deep nor good in that regard. There's not a good metaphorical base to pull from.
There's also not a lot to celebrate, really, because basically, like, the American tradition is you just, like, murder everybody.
You show up, murder,
and take,
a lot,
take all their
all.
Stuff, and you eat all their things.
And that's once you're in a civilized society, it's just not a thing you can do.
Yeah, so we have to, like, so we used to celebrate that, I guess, but now we had to, like, distance ourselves from it, which we did through pure unadulterated capitalism.
But think about, like, the Purge.
Yeah.
That's more like an American holiday.
Yeah, America was 24/7 Purge.
Yeah. You know?
That's true. It was.
Just horrible.
Yeah, but yeah, we don't want to celebrate that.
No.
We'll get back to the money bags.
Yeah, money. You're eating bags of money.
So I'm like, I want to make huge bags of money. But of course, you're not supposed to. Dumplings are supposed to be small. But because of
Is it better to eat a smaller number of giant money bags? Well, we got to bring this back to real life.
Well, here's the question.
If in real life, which would be better? You know?
Right, right. I think it'd be better to, because the volume, there's the
question. Well, I think most importantly, a bag can contain any amount of money. You know, because you have different denominations of currencies, right?
That's true. But if your currency is only measured in pork and cabbage.
Obviously, all pork, no cabbage, because pork is...
Yeah, you got to maximize
pork
that ratio.
Pork is the $100 bill of food.
Mm-hmm. So you need fewer and larger ones.
But yeah, so we ended up making these dumplings, and because of how we rolled out the dough and the fact that we made it at home, they were monstrous. I mean, at least 2 to 3 times the
Was it like pita
size.
Bread?
No. The dough wasn't super thick, but it was thick enough that you could... You're not supposed to be able to get a lot of meat in there. Because they're usually very small.
Mm.
But instead, these things were these whoppers. And so you just pick, it's like a taco, essentially, in terms of scale. And we ate all of them. It was delicious.
Did you steam them? Or did you?
No, we boiled them.
Okay.
Boil them. And then Diana fried up the back half so we could buy ourselves like 10 more minutes of time to digest to finish all of them because there were so many.
Yep.
But yeah, it was delicious. Fantastic. And then on Saturday.
Then we did hot pot.
We did hot pot at Adam's place.
Yeah. My wife put together fantastic, amazing hot pot.
This was my first hot pot experience.
Yep.
What is hot pot? What is hot potting?
Hot pot, you just get a hot pot, put some stuff in it.
Wait, a hot pot, you mean a pot that is hot.
A pot that is hot.
Mm-hmm. It's literal.
Yep. And throw some liquid in there, probably soup, though presumably you could put whatever you want in there. You know?
Could put ginger ale in
ginger
there.
Ginger ale. But there was a lot of ginger in there, so it basically was ginger ale.
That's right. I think the better way to think about it is it is a heated pot.
It's actively heated while you're working.
It's on an induction plate.
Right, because like a pot of soup is basically a hot pot, and then it gradually turns into a cold pot.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? But
yeah, it starts hot and stays hot.
Yeah, hot pot is heated while you're working on it, while you're eating it.
So
it
goes there's just the stuff in there, then there's just stuff on the table you can just pick up and throw in there, take it back out and eat it once it's cooked.
Yeah, so there's just piles of raw meat, thinly sliced all over the place. You just grab a handful and just chuck it in the hot pot and then you fish it out after it cooks in 2 minutes with chopsticks.
But the most important thing I learned from the experience is how creepy and weird bamboo shoots are. Because I've never actually, like, I've had bamboo in lots of contexts in dishes, but I've never just, like, seen the thing, you know, the thing that it actually comes from. This, like, the root tip or whatever this thing is. So it looks like...
This is the underground, the subterranean
I actually think
part.
It's above ground.
Okay.
I don't know. So I was looking at pictures of it, trying to understand what the hell I was looking at.
Where does this come from?
Yeah, but it sort of looks like if you were to take, if you were to imagine an enormous bee with a huge stinger, you know, so say like a good 6-inch long, like fat,
so we're talking
stubby
like a prehistoric
stinger. Prehistoric bee, okay. Right. If you're just to rip that off, then that's basically what this thing is.
When I saw it, I thought it was one of those pangolin things.
Yeah, it looks kind of like a pangolin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not a, like not a penguin, a pangolin.
A pangolin, mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's those weird armadillos that walk around on two legs like velociraptors.
Yep. Yep. But that stuff cooked up fresh is real good.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I hadn't actually seen it. There were all these things that every once in a while I'm like, oh yeah, I actually have no idea what that looks like when it's not prepared, you know, when it's not already in food somewhere. And that was one of those things. Very, very
I've had some of those moments. The other day I was thinking about car horns and how I actually just don't know how that sound comes out. What's in there? Making that noise?
Yeah, I don't know.
I think it's a person or maybe an animal that just the wires are attached to. So it's just it screaming when it gets electrocuted.
Is it a speaker or is it air driven?
Well, I assume it's blasting air through something. I don't know. But it's just one of the, you just take it for granted. You're like, yeah, you hit that thing and then your car just kind of screams.
But car alarms have all kinds of ways to scream. So it probably isn't just squirting air somewhere. It's probably like a giant speaker or something.
Giant speaker.
Could be. We'll never know. And there's no way to find out.
There's no way to find out.
One of history's mysteries.
Also, last week we talked about Adam sort of getting his life in order. Including,
yep, it went really well, except that the one thing that was the most important thing in my entire getting my life together life
was your desk.
My desk, and it came broken in half.
Broken in half.
Broken in half, which was very impressive because it was, I mean, it's not a fancy desk by any stretch. It was very cheap. It was like the best looking thing I could get at the cheapest price possible. I was like finding that little sweet spot, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's made out of particle board, but particle board's pretty strong stuff. And it was literally just snapped in half, which I was just so impressed by because like the box was all torn up and they had taped it back up. So somebody knew they did
it. So somebody fucking smashed the box.
There was no way to not know because of how hard you've had to hit this thing. And it had to have been hit on a corner, like on a loading dock or something, like somebody just body slammed it onto a corner.
They were suplexing the packages.
Yeah, they had to have been. Yeah. And there was no way they couldn't have heard this thing just break because the amount, it was literally broken in half. It wasn't like cracked, you know, it wasn't, there was nothing gentle about it.
There had to have been. A sound.
There had to have been a loud sound.
They probably heard the sound and they're like, I'm just going to muffle this with tape.
Yeah, just tape that right up.
Screaming.
Yep. So I still don't have that. So I submitted a request to, you know, get a replacement desktop so I can get that resolved. Mm-hmm. But it takes longer just to get a part than, you know, the whole thing. And so now I'm just stuck in limbo, still working at the dining room table.
Mm-hmm. My God. The pain and misery never ends.
But it is funny though, because once you decide to fix a thing, then it's actually way more frustrating when it's not fixed, you know? Because like,
even though you haven't had a desk for years.
I haven't had a desk
now.
For a year and a half. And
you also were trying.
Exactly.
Know?
I wasn't trying to fix the problem. Then I tried to fix it and then it was fixed. Like I could see, the box arrived. I was looking at it, you know, and I was like, fuck yeah, I'm going to make this tonight. And then I'm going to set up my desktop. It's going to be amazing.
And then the mailman's like, not today.
just broken in half.
Well, we don't know who did it. It might have been just some random vandal who attacked the mail truck.
And then taped up the broken
snapped
package.
Up the box.
It is the year of the dog, maybe.
Somebody didn't give a fuck.
Could have been a dog. We don't know.
Very large dog.
Shoot it right in half.
Also, everybody needs to be careful because mini eggs are out.
Yes.
That's
watch your waistline, watch your blood sugar. It's about to get rough.
Watch yourself before you wreck yourself.
that's correct, yes.
Mini eggs, as we all know, are manna from heaven. Mm-hmm. They are, in all ancient mythology, anytime there's a discussion about sort of the food that the gods eat, it's mini eggs.
Yep. Yeah. Now, anytime you see the word manna or nectar or any of those old fucking timey words,
I don't mean
old timey like 100 years ago. I mean, you know, thousands of years ago.
So Cadbury came along and they were like, we need to try to create a mortal version of this food of the gods.
Well,
they've gotten very close.
I just assumed that they captured the like whatever the sort of duck rabbit hybrid creatures that lived on Mount Olympus or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
That I just assumed that
are
Cadbury,
made of chocolate.
That are made of chocolate. I assume that Cadbury just captured those. And they've been just kind of keeping them in a lab somewhere, you know, like locked up in a basement.
Yeah.
I mean, the taste is so good, though. I think they must be free range.
They may be free range.
Must be
possible,
free range.
There's
happy.
No antibiotics in those.
Mm-hmm. Right. So they probably feed them additional chocolate or something, you know?
That's cannibalism. But yeah, yes.
But there's also, what it, I mean, this does explain though why they only come out once a year, because you gotta, you know, there's only so many eggs these rabbits.
It's breeding season.
Things can lay. Yeah, it's breeding season. You gotta grow up your creature flock. Mm-hmm. I assume it's a flock.
Yeah,
maybe a gag.
So could be, yeah. So of course, get out there. Get yourself some mini eggs. Go get them.
But if these are combined rabbit and goose creatures, and that's a flock and a gaggle put together, would it be a Glock?
It's a Glock.
Is it the total herd?
Yeah.
You get yourself a Glock of mini egg producing. Glock.
Yeah, get out there, get yourself some mini eggs, but just be careful. Spend some extra time in the gym. Pace yourself, because they're going to be out for a couple months now.
And then even when they're not, you can still get them on Amazon for a few more months.
Horrible. Shouldn't have let that secret out. Can,
no, we're in Pandora's box. Yeah, we're in the 6-month window
where you can have eggs. These.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you can order them 5 pounds at a time off of Amazon.
Yep. Don't tell which people.
We also set up an energy station, which I'm particularly excited about. Now in the office, we've got a coffee brewer. And then next to that, we've got a 24 pack of sort of on display 5-hour energies. Mm-hmm.
They look very beautiful.
It's very beautiful. Retention. None of us have cracked into it yet. But when we combine this with mini,
how many hours of energy is that?
It's 120 hours or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
120 hours of energy.
It's a lot of energy.
So that should allow us to finish up the game.
Yeah.
Otherwise in the news, Sam want to talk about his new sketch routine as the artist.
Okay. Yeah. So one of the biggest problems I've had, and I'm sure a lot of people who tried to get into just a new thing, period, that is kind of hard to do. In my case, that's just drawing with your hands at home. So I wanted to come up with a routine that would have sort of eased me into it. And I think the correct mindset, which is the not giving a fuck mindset, because it's one of those things where the harder you try to do it, the worse the outcome gets. And so you just have to be kind of loose and just having fun. And so I set up this routine over the weekend, which I've now done 3 times. It works like a charm, where essentially the first 5 minutes, I just use this program that Seth built, which we'll put in the Discord after this, if anybody wants to use it. Which is called Precision Hand Hero.
Yeah.
And it's essentially just a few different of these exercises that are designed to help train your hand-eye coordination. So
it's three different games, mini games. Mm-hmm.
So one is connecting dots.
Basically. Dot Hero.
Yeah. So you hold down the mouse and just sort of drag your mouse through, trying to hit the center of these various sized dots. And then another one is just drawing lines. Drawing perfectly straight lines. And then the last one is drawing a circle.
A perfect circle.
Mm-hmm. And then it measures how perfect it was. And so I managed to get like a 92% perfect circle. Seems to be very hard to get above that. So I'm not sure if I'm going to ever make any headway on that. So I spent a few minutes doing this, which is sort of this meditative thing where you're kind of getting loose. You know, it's like a warm up.
I put on some super chill music in Precision Hand Hero.
Yeah.
You just put on your headphones and just draw circles.
You just get in there. And so after about 5 minutes.
It's weirdly hypnotic.
It is. It is. You could stay there for like probably too long of a time, I think. So
yeah, when I was testing it, I started drawing a circle. And then I didn't realize 15 minutes had gone by of me just drawing a circle. Draw a circle. Draw a circle. Keep drawing a circle. Yeah.
So, it's all about that tight feedback loop.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's basically the way it works is you draw the circle and then the game sort of calculates based on where your dots landed. The closest circle that would sort of approximate the shape that you made, then it measures how close each point on your line is, right? Mm-hmm. But this all happens instantly. So you draw the circle, and then as soon as you let go of the mouse, immediately there's a superimposed circle on there plus a score. Mm-hmm. So it's like as soon as you release the mouse, you have a score. Then you can just click again and do it again and again and again. So it works pretty well.
Yeah, it works really well. So I do that, and then just take a sheet, a little tiny, like a Moleskine sheet, a little tiny piece, and just fill it with random shapes. So just, again, kind of like, good as fuck. And then pick one of them and kind of like do it up super hard to turn it into something weird or texture or whatever. And then I throw that aside. And then the night before this whole exercise, I pick a thing that I'm going to draw that day. So this morning it was spikes. Like, I'm just going to draw spikes this morning. So after I finish those few warm-ups, then I just start drawing spikes. And then I can easily pass like 45 to 60 minutes before I, start getting to that point where I'm like, wait, I'm drawing all of a sudden. And so it's really helped to kind of loosen me up and make it way easier to just do the thing, which, we talk about kind of getting into, whether it's getting into games or art or just kind of making yourself better. And I think a lot of people try really hard and probably too hard when they're attempting to do something new, because they're not necessarily building a system to help themselves do it. They're just kind of like, I'm going to willpower my way into this endeavor. And it's just really hard to do. Like I've failed so many times at actually trying to get this habit in the past. And honestly, like the last 3 days of doing this consistently is by far the most consistent and the most time that I spent just drawing, period.
Why do you think that is? Because I've often made the mistake of if I have something that I need to do, then I'll say, I'm gonna quote, set aside some time to work on it.
Yes.
And like, that's the way that I would think about mm-hmm. it. And then that's such a loose sort of amorphous bullshit sort right. of a thing that I could just sort of gaze upon it for 3 minutes and technically meet my predetermined goal right. of setting aside some time to work on it. Right. So do you think it's because you're approaching this saying, I'm going to draw spikes for an hour. Mm-hmm. And then now you've got a time limit and you've got a very specific thing that you're doing.
Yeah. Right? Well, yeah, the whole thing is designed. Well, I think actually the first part is the part that makes the difference. It's the warm up. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like it's basically you're building up enough momentum to actually do the thing by doing a bunch of things that are smaller that are just not hard to do. Look, yeah. anybody could just sit there and like fill a note card with random shapes. That is not a difficult thing to do. And what that allows you to do is it makes it so you're already essentially doing the activity, but just in a less guided way or in a less complex way. And then you just are there.
Also. You're just getting the pencil onto the paper.
Exactly. So I think having, you know, building that sort of essentially a momentum or kind of a rising system into learning a new thing has been very helpful for me the last couple of days. And so highly recommend it. Just take a few minutes and sort of back up and say, okay, if I want to do this one thing, what's maybe one or two things that are, you know, 10 minutes in time that I could do that sort of get me in there?
Hmm.
You know?
Yeah. I approach things in that same way. I think there are two ways to approach something that can work. Mm-hmm. One is you say, this entire week, all of my time is going into this, mm-hmm. right? And then you just dive in and like, that's all you're doing. So you're not setting aside time.
That is your time.
That just is the time. That is mm-hmm. what all of your time is for. You're just going to dive in because you have some kind of big goal you want to accomplish. So this is how I usually tackle learning something like really new and really big, like a programming language or something.
Because it's immersion.
It's immersion, exactly. Mm-hmm. So that's assuming you can afford that kind of time. So if you can't, then I think the only reasonable other approach is to do
what you're talking about, which is to say,
well, if I can't just completely go grab this thing and do it, mm-hmm. then I have to break it apart into chunks that are somehow approachable and reasonable. Right. And the only way to do that is to take away all of the sense of when you sit down to do it, given that you've got some limited time, you're trying to repeat it. You have to take away all sense that this is an obstacle. You mm-hmm. know, there just has to be something that you can just make some, just chip away at and make yeah. progress at in a consistent way.
So I did some thinking over this past weekend about the idea of the hero's journey,
mm-hmm.
which is it's a narrative. We'll call it a trope because it is. Well, it's a framework.
It's an archetype.
An archetype of a story, which you can find in basically almost any story where you're like, that's a good story. It's probably a hero's journey story.
Right.
So Lord of the Rings, Star Wars, Harry Potter, any superhero mm-hmm. movie at all. And this situation is basically there's a normal person living a normal life, just doing their thing. Probably not super happy about it. They're just kind of cruising. Then there's a call to adventure. Like something comes that thrusts that person into some incredible new scenario. Mm-hmm. And usually what this means is that this person is now exposed to some world or some new place that they had no idea was mm-hmm. there. Or that they had disregarded, right? So in the case of something like Harry Potter, you know, it's like this poor kid living with an abusive family under the stairs. Then all of a sudden he's like buying an owl and getting a right. wand and there's like magic everywhere. And or in the case of Star Wars, you know, like there's this catalyzing event where Luke's family is killed and then this old man in a robe shows up and then he goes to space and becomes a mm-hmm. space wizard.
A lot of wizards in these example mm-hmm. stories.
Everybody needs, yeah, you always need a mentor with a robe.
Yep.
So, you know, Obi-Wan,
Hagrid.
Morpheus, Dumbledore, Gandalf. Mm-hmm. It's always a person in a long clothes, mm-hmm. right?
Long
Later
clothes.
They'll get killed because you know, that's what happens to mentors. Mm-hmm. So then this person goes and they learn stuff and then they confront a series of challenges and then they sort of become an expert in this thing. Dr. Strange, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm.
And they're always a dick about it.
They are.
You know? Yeah. Like every one of these stories, they're just like, cause like Harry Potter goes to wizarding school. Like this is the opportunity of a fucking lifetime. He's dicking around doing all kinds of nonsense.
Right.
Man.
Well, that's because.
And Doctor Strange, literally just an asshole, right?
Right.
Just a total jerk. He like sees magic and then is just still an asshole the whole time, you know?
Right. So what has to happen though, is they come into it super cocky.
Yeah.
Because they have baggage from their old life, mm-hmm. right? They come into it super cocky. Then they get fucking annihilated mm-hmm. by something.
Yep.
They get their hand cut off by Darth Vader.
Or Doctor Strange, you get your soul punched out of your body.
you get your soul punched out of your body.
That tends to wake a person up.
Yeah, right? You're like, so something happens where like the villain comes in and just fucks your shit up mm-hmm. real good.
Or your mentor.
Or your mentor does it.
Just right? Somebody's got to fuck your shit up though.
That's true. That woman also wore a robe in Doctor Strange.
That's true.
Mentors wear robes. I think we can all agree.
Uh-huh. You see one on the street.
You're like,
can you teach me something?
Whatever it is that you do. Can you teach me?
It will be the end of you, but I need the knowledge.
You will die from this. So you do that thing, you get your mentor, you get your soul punched out of your body or whatever, then you go confront the evil. Mm-hmm. You lose the first time, and your cockiness then subsides.
You become humble.
Like, then you're like, I am humble now, I must go learn. Mm-hmm. You go learn your shit, then you go back and you fight the villain with your newfound humbleness.
Mm-hmm. And then it's still a close thing, though, because we need dramatic excitement and tension. Right.
Then when you're done, then you come back, then you take your victory treasures or whatever, you save the world. You now have a robe, whatever it is, mm-hmm. and then you return home and you get your medal with your Chewbacca friends mm-hmm. or whatever it is that happens, right?
Yep.
So this sort of story archetype is there all over the place. And I think it's there because of how relatable it is at the beginning, which is like, normal person, normal life.
Humdrumming along.
And it's appealing to people because there's this idea that there's like this secret world that you don't even know is there. And something,
if only you knew, that would unlock all of your potential.
Right, and something happens that just pulls you into it, right? And now all of a sudden you have all this hidden potential that the normal world would not tap into, mm-hmm. right? So Neo from the Matrix or whatever, right? He's just in his cubicle and falling asleep at his computer when really he's the one, right? And I was thinking about how this is, it's interesting because there's sort of two parts about this that are kind of cool. One is there actually are all these secret worlds that people don't know about.
Yeah.
Right? So like you may be living your life as an accountant or something and you, mm-hmm. but you have no idea what it's like to be in a fucking band. Or to make video games or whatever. Like there's all these different worlds that you could just dive into at any point that have their own rules, that have their own language, their own ways of thinking about things, you know, whatever. But I think what makes the hero's journey story actually unrealistic is that always in the hero's journey, somebody from that world pulls the hero into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They make you do it.
But the realistic part though, is that you fight it the whole time.
Yeah, and they always fight it.
Dick about it.
Yeah, and so, but well, this
just
is
to bring it back to that.
I think the interesting part is, you know, the protagonist in the hero's journey always resists being pulled into the new world, and it takes some horrible event or just some overwhelming force to basically demand that they rise to the occasion,
or a lot of charisma on the part of the mentor.
Mm-hmm. Right, you hand them the red pill and the blue pill, kind of a thing.
Yeah, you're like, look how cool my glasses are,
and then maybe like a robot bug goes into your belly button or something.
Yeah, right. Again, that'll wake anybody up.
Yeah, you're like, oh fuck, this is serious. So I was just thinking about how there's all these secret worlds out there, and anybody could wake up at some point. Someday and just mm-hmm. say, I'm going to go there. Like, I'm going to go into that world and learn that thing and do that thing. But you can't wait around for some robed wizard to show up and pull you in there. In the real world, you got to go there yourself.
Yeah. Well, I don't even think that's it. I think there are people in robes, invisible robes mostly, but there are people in robes all around you all the time trying to pull you into those worlds. And you're just flipping them off constantly. Because, you know? Like, I mean...
Fuck you, wizards!
But this whole idea, because this makes me think of programming, right? Especially because programming is just magic that you do inside of
computers. It is a secret language that you use to talk to machines and create universes. Yeah.
It's just magic.
Here's the thing, even accounting.
Yeah, accounting is magic with numbers, right?
Yeah. Any of
the things are magic, yeah. right?
Astronomy, physics.
But I'm like, I used to spend a lot of my time trying to convince other people to just learn some programming because I'm like, if you just get in here, if you just get in there.
It's
so good. Mm-hmm. Your life changes. You see the world in all these new ways and so on. And everybody, you know, and I feel like I'm showing somebody a view into this other world, you know, and they're just like, nah,
Well, but there's a reason that they're
not doing that.
It's because nothing is free. Yeah. What it costs you to go into a new world is you've got to leave the one that you're in, right?
Yeah.
And so even if people aren't necessarily super happy, they are comfortable because
even if they're uncomfortable.
Well, but yeah, because
they're still more comfortable than doing
something. But what's worse than discomfort is uncertainty.
Correct.
Right. And if you go from a place you know, even if you know it sucks, it's but you
phrase,
do know it.
It's the devil you know versus the devil you don't phrase.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I was doing some reading about sort of like just the concept of the hero's journey, because I think it's just like a really fascinating metaphor for this idea of, like you said, just saying, I'm going to set aside several weeks and just learn this completely new thing. Mm-hmm. Right. What you're doing there is you are sort of diving into a completely new world that you don't even know exists,
yeah.
right? You don't know the rules. Mm-hmm. You don't know how to think about it. You don't know what spells to cast to make different things happen. So I think it's just it's a really apt metaphor for how this all works. Mm-hmm. But again, the thing that separates the real world from the movies is nobody's going to fucking
When somebody tells me they don't want to learn programming, I'm not going to fucking come after you and make you do it and murder your family.
Yeah, you're busy.
I got stuff to do.
Programmer problems.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What I think is the interesting thing, though, is that the question that arises out of this is, if there was magic in the world, real legit shit you see in movies, would anybody actually be doing it? Because I mean, probably
a few people would be.
A few people probably would. Yeah. Everybody else would be like, yeah.
Looks like a lot of work.
Well, no, they wouldn't even say that. They would just carry on, right? Because people carry on.
Right.
It's the most realistic part of Harry Potter to me is that fact that there are bad students, right?
Right.
What the hell?
Of
you know?
Magic.
Of magic. You get to go do fucking magic and they're just like, study for this test.
I think about this because when we went to Uruguay, I was reflecting on my high school experience because we had Spanish class in high school and learning programming, learning to speak another language, learning science, it's fucking magic.
Yeah.
Like, there's millions of people in the world who only speak Spanish. Mm-hmm. And if I learned to...
You introduced yourself to a new world.
Yeah, if I learned to speak this language, I can now go to that world and do things there that I could never have done and meet people I could never have met, right? It's fucking magic. Mm-hmm. But as a teenager... I'm just like, ooh, but I don't wanna. Yeah. Quit making me. It's a required course. Yeah.
Right.
So I guess the question is, it's 2018, you know?
Yeah.
So quit fucking around.
2018.
What magic?
What hero's journey?
I don't know. Like, what magic are you just ignoring in your
fucking all of it?
I mean,
man.
For me, it's like
all of it.
Cooking. I eat food every day.
Yeah.
Where does it come from? How does it make?
And I can make like three dishes.
Yeah.
Instead, it's hideous.
Yeah.
You know?
So you got to you got to think, there's all this fucking magic out there. Mm-hmm. And you don't know how to cast the spells. You don't know the incantations.
We went over and Adam had this tome at his house. It said three ingredient cocktails and very fancy scripts. Very mysterious looking magic book.
It's how I cast spells into glasses that then make you drunk.
Yeah.
But in the most delightful way possible.
Adam was like, what do you want? And I was like, I don't know. And he had these strange seven bottles. Filled with all sorts of liquid smells.
He's doing colors. Fucking alchemy.
And I was like, just make me something that's good. And he's like, I will find you. And flips through his tome for a minute. And then he goes, puts the tome down, mixes something up, and gives it delicious. And I got super drunk.
Fucking booze mancer.
Yeah.
Well, it was one of those things I finally decided just to do because my wife and I like whiskey. So we just kind of have like every few nights we'll just have like a little bit of whiskey, just like sit down and have it on the rocks, just chat, have some, you know, it's nice. But after a while, I was getting really bored with that because I also don't like the really fancy whiskeys that taste and smell like markers, you know?
Right.
So I was just like, and I just prefer mixed drinks because I don't like burning my throat out. I want something you know, interesting. So I decided just to go for it. And so I've been like trying to find all these ingredients, trying to figure out like, what are bitters? The fuck are these things, you know?
Heard that word a lot.
I know, exactly.
Bitters.
So I started you know, buying up stuff. And then I'm like, what's the difference between bourbon and rye? You know, like to me, I just call those all whiskey still. But now I'll buy a few things and I'll bring them home and I'll taste them all separately to kind of figure out what the difference is. Mm-hmm. And then when I'm mixing up a drink, every time I add something, I taste that to see, you know?
Yeah, you're becoming a boozemancer.
Yeah, to try to figure out how it all works. But it's cool because it's one of those things I always felt like a lot of it was bullshit. You know, like the little lemon twist that or like the orange peel twist or whatever that you put on top. I was always like, who gives a shit? This is just decoration, you know? But it turns out I then tried it before and after and I was like, holy fuck, you can tell there's a reason for this, right. You know? It's cool. It's really,
so
really
I used
cool.
to, I used to have this thing that I would say or think, which is whenever somebody would talk about being bored, my response would be, well, you get to be ambitious or bored, but not both. Uh-huh. Right. Because if you're bored, that means you haven't figured your shit out. Right. But maybe what boredom is it's really just
being a muggle.
It's your brain. It's your brain sort of slapping you, trying to be like, there's shit out there. Like, it's the call to adventure is right. What boredom is, right? It's an unpleasant feeling.
But most people are just looking at their phones as soon as they get bored.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yep. Because that's the easiest way to not be bored now is to, because I mean, the fact is that's a little portal in your pocket to another magical world, you know, which is,
right.
Which is all of human knowledge, except you only look at Reddit though. Yeah. Even though it's all of human knowledge is right there.
You can
like,
learn. You're
like, what do a bunch of randos think right
think
now?
Think about a bunch of bullshit that I don't care about.
Yeah.
Let's go figure that out.
Let's go look at that real quick. I want to see some pictures.
I could go to Hogwarts and learn how to, you know, turn a person into a newt.
Yep.
Or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know what they do there.
Or but. Or you can watch a fucking YouTube video for 5 minutes and learn how to put drywall up.
Yeah.
You know?
Or how to cut vegetables.
Or cut some vegetables. Actually, because, yeah, I mean, Jenny and I, forever ago, back when we were living in Dallas, sometime we were just like, we should learn how to, like, use a cooking knife properly, you know? So we just watched, like, 5 YouTube videos back to back, spent like an hour watching people do stuff. The first thing we realized, like, within a minute was we just held knives wrong our entire lives for cooking knives, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So we learned that immediately. Like, what the hell? Like, you know, so this new world opens up, and then we're, like, learning all these different techniques. We get a whole bunch of onions and carrots. We're just practicing all these methods, you know? And, like, I haven't fully embraced cooking yet at all.
Mm-hmm.
But now when I pick up a knife, I'm like, I know how to use this thing.
Hold it.
And it did. It was weird because it just opened up that piece a little bit. And now I care about things like how sharp and how high quality is my knife because I can tell there's a difference, you know?
One of my ingredients in my batch meals was peppers, red peppers, bell peppers.
Yeah.
Which, of course, they're weird to cut because it's like a...
They're shaped
it's
weird.
It's like a ball, but with a core in it.
Yep.
And so I would always just cut them. And then one day I was like, how can somebody do this faster? This right. is ridiculous. And then I watched this video. This guy just, you cut the bottom off first, about halfway. Uh-huh. And you cut around the edges after that. It's like 4 cuts and you're done.
Yep.
And it's just, it saved me probably a minute. You know, of my life per 2 peppers.
Yeah, because some fucking peppermancer out right. there has been dedicating their yeah. life mm-hmm. to solving this problem. Yeah. And it's on YouTube because yeah. everything's on YouTube.
Yeah. So yeah, what magic are you ignoring?
Yeah. So next time you're about to open up Reddit instead, just say, what could I learn on YouTube?
What
right
kind
now?
Of spells could I be learning?
Yeah. Change your life.
It's more fun to think learn about physics, learn calculus. As magic.
But this is what pisses me off yeah. though, is when people say, I hate art. I hate I don't care about music. I hate math, right? Mm-hmm. People will just make these sweeping declarations about hating a specific sort of field of knowledge or discipline or
man,
whatever.
I do hate necromancers, though. Shit freaks me out.
That's a little bit disturbing.
Mm-hmm. But it is very cool.
It's neat.
But it's as a discipline, it's very fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah, but the fact is, that is just you saying, if you just substitute whatever it is that you hate that you're about to say right now with the word magic, because that's always what that thing is, you know?
Yep.
If you just instead say, I hate magic.
And then
reflect on how stupid that is.
Speaking of magic, I need to learn how to do magic as well. Like,
yeah, actual magic. Yeah.
Card tricks.
Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
That's, every time I see that, it just blows my fucking mind. Yep. Anyways. All right. Let's get on to some
questions.
Well, we got a couple more news things unless we want to just hit questions.
I think the other ones are short, aren't they? What do we have left?
All right. So we sent out a newsletter and we learned something fascinating.
Time of day matters a ton. We already knew this, but to the extent to which it matters, did not know.
Yeah,
so we'll do better next time.
So basically, depending on the summation, as I caught it, was depending on when we send the newsletter, our open rate could be down to 7%.
Or up to 50.
Or up to 50%.
Yep.
For those who are counting at home, that's
a big difference.
That is a big difference.
As far as the numbers go, it's big. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have to figure that shit out.
Yep.
Yeah. The impact was we learned that we could have had literally twice as many people opened the newsletter we sent as we actually had opened.
Which is upwards of 50,000.
Which was 50,000.
So, you know, oops and everything.
Yep.
But even despite that, we managed to get about over 600 signups to the ABS.
Which is the anti-bug squad.
The anti-bug squad.
Uh-huh.
For that's our testing group. So if you want to get your name into the ABS, go to bit.ly/powerfulbscotchabs with hyphens in between.
Yep. And then I also put out an application for moderator status. And so if you're into our community, if you've been here for a while and you want to, you know, kind of chip in mm-hmm. in some way. That's live. You can find both these things in the announcement section of our Discord channel at discord.gg/bscotch. Mm-hmm. So you can just check that out if that's the kind of thing you're into.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Also, we have the Crash Lands comic, which we talked about mm-hmm. in the newsletter. That's doing super well. We've had over 2,000 downloads through the itch page of the comic. Really good response to that. So if you want to enjoy that comic, it's free. But you can give us money for it if you want to.
And we would prefer it.
We'd prefer it.
If we're being completely honest.
Because it wasn't free to have it made.
No. So.
Mm-hmm. We had to pay a comic artist.
Yeah, so thanks to Ben Sawyer for mm-hmm. using his comic mancy mm-hmm. to put together this comic.
He manced it real good.
Yeah, he did.
All right, let's get on to some questions. These questions come from podcast.bscotch.net. So if you'd like to get your question on a future episode, go on there and put in your questions. All right, first question from John Pat Chap. General life question incoming. I'm an adult baby with a college degree in one field and then a ton of professional experience in pretty unrelated things. Music, photography, service industry, and recently game programming. So, as people who have been on the hiring side of things, is a resume that's full of experience in disparate disciplines useful at all to an employer? I'm thinking it could show the ability to learn and adapt, but maybe it just looks like I can't make up my goddamn mind. Any thoughts?
I got so distracted by adult baby that I was having trouble parsing the rest of it.
I think being an adult baby is way better than being an adult, because babies are real good at just learning stuff, absorbing info.
I think that's what he's going for there.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Stay there.
He's an adult baby because he's curious about the world.
Mm-hmm. Stay in puppy form.
Yeah. So then the real question is, if you've done a lot of different things, do employers look favorably or unfavorably upon that?
The first, I think there's an obvious answer that we can dig into a bit, which is it depends on the employer a lot. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is, have you done any of them well?
That is, I think, the key.
Because that's the most important question. Because
if you write, you know, oh, I play paintball, I play guitar, I'm a swimmer, I can make mm-hmm. real good spaghetti.
And if that means, like, you can play Wonderwall, you can do freestyle for 50 yards.
Right.
You can boil some noodles. Like, if that's what that means.
Because anybody,
you know, maybe.
Anybody can put in the 15 to 20 hours required to hit those milestones.
Yeah, it's probably not that many.
Yeah, so the thing to focus on is always what is a demonstration of your actual expertise in any one of those things. So if you did photography for a while,
do you have a portfolio?
Yeah, you have a portfolio to put together, because put that in.
Can you actually take good photographs? Mm-hmm.
Do you have a website that somehow showcases like the best parts of all of these talents mm-hmm. that you have?
If you're in the service industry, which oftentimes involves dealing with horrible
human beings,
or just doing really nice things for people, which are kind of.
Do you have a business card that says multi-talented human enthusiast?
Mm-hmm. Human enthusiast.
Do you have a story of some ridiculous thing that you did for a customer or something mm-hmm. you managed to stop someone from doing, like breaking a desk in half, for example?
Yeah. So we actually had
if they did break it in half, just not be like, it's okay, just tape it back up.
Just tape it back up.
Put it back on the truck.
Do you have that kind of judgment?
Yeah.
Yeah. We had kind of a goofy Discord conversation this weekend about that whole, what's the phrase like? Half of the journey is the last 10% mm-hmm. and whatever. So then we started having a debate about the actual percentage of a journey that matters, mm-hmm. right? So my stance was that the first 5% of a journey doesn't fucking matter at all.
This is the warm up.
Anybody can start doing something. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people do start doing a lot of things and then they stop, mm-hmm. right? And then the last 5% also doesn't matter, because by the time you've made it that far, you know, you're pretty much
it's just
finish.
Incremental gains from there.
At that point, you're just being a perfectionist, you know.
Yeah. Maybe just tone it down a bit.
Yeah. So really, the only part of a journey that matters is the middle 90%, which is all the fucking hard work where you just grind it out and try to make something really good, mm-hmm. right? So if you've gone far enough into these activities that you're past the first 5%.
If you've demonstrated grit in something.
Yeah, you got to demonstrate grit and actually have real skills and real demonstrable output in these areas.
I think the whole point is that there are meta-level skills associated with every single one of these things that is what you should focus on. So if you're trying to go into software development, for example, you say, yeah, I did photography, so I have an eye for design and aesthetics based on here's a portfolio that I did that actually looks good, for example. I'm in the service industry, so I can actually communicate between like our engineering side and new coming customers, because I know how to talk to humans and how to get them to calm down, which also means that I have a higher focus on UX because I'm constantly simulating the customer experience in my mind while I'm programming, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You just pull on these things that are actually higher level traits associated with actually fulfilling any one of these roles.
Yeah, I think it's a rare job that truly benefits from somebody who only knows how to do one thing.
Correct.
That isn't to say that there are a lot of jobs out there who think that that's the person that they want.
Wait, you got to be in a very large company if that's the case. And you got to be prepared to get laid off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's sort of like how when somebody plants a grove of all the same tree and then like a single disease comes and they all get wiped out. Yeah. Right?
Well, if you're just the same as the next guy, then now it's just...
Yeah. So if
what's the difference between you and anybody else?
Yeah. And if you work at a company and you only have one skill and they only hired you for one thing, then if the sort of environment around that company changes such that that skill is not a thing that they're looking for anymore, then they just lay off that department.
Yeah.
Right.
So I'd say focus on what ends up being sort of the high level threads that come through all of these disciplines that you're talking about. And always focus on what you've managed to accomplish in there to demonstrate things like grit and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Don't put anything on there that is equivalent to the whole like boiling noodles to make spaghetti thing. It's just not like, don't even throw that low valuable thing in there because you think more things is good.
But I will say there's something that you got to think about from the employer's perspective, which is the general homogeny of applications. Once you reach a certain sort of threshold, so if you're applying to be a programmer or whatever, you know, people will have gone to different schools. So maybe they'll sort by GPA. But remember that they're always looking for reasons to kind of like filter people out and throw people out.
Yeah, you're not looking for reasons to keep people. You're looking for reasons to kick people out when going through a stack of resumes.
And so when they get to the end of that process, then the final piece of it is, how much do I just kind of like see myself being around this person all day, right? And just working.
Here we're talking about a company where you'd want to work.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. And so I think in my wife's case, actually the two things that got her into her job that she's now been at for a very long time. And she was fresh out of a master's program. So no sort of direct work experience or not very much to speak of. But the thing that got her in was that she had played tennis. And they were like, well, if you've played tennis at the college level and you've been on, you know, athletic teams and stuff, then you know what it means to work hard and get shit done. Right. And that was the thing that differentiated her from the rest of the job candidates. Mm-hmm. Right. And so
it's those extracurriculars, man.
It actually is about
It is about
demonstrating something that you have aside from the core, you know, requirements that is going to be something that.
But you have to pull it into the high level, right? Because if you say like, yeah, I can hit tennis balls real good, no one gives a fuck.
That's not really relevant to programming.
If you say, I got up at 6 a.m. every day, did this intense routine.
And I was bad at it for a long time, but I did it anyway. And
also got good grades at the same time.
Yep.
Then that does demonstrate to me.
Yeah. So that's the way to.
So I guess long story short, I think in general, if the more things you can do reasonably well, just the better, period.
Yes.
It makes you replaceable. It makes all of your knowledge have broader context and be more valuable and interesting. And it lets you have insight on just about anything that happens.
Right, because you can manse.
You just manse everything.
Just all the things. All right, next question comes from My Secret Weapon. As a developer, how do you price a game? Often I've found a creator will have a very different value placed on their work than a consumer will. So how do you find that magic number?
Well, consumers want everything for free, so let's just establish that, especially in games.
Well, and developers want as much money as possible.
Right.
Just, I mean, in the...
I fucking love that now we've just all accepted that people are just called consumers. Like, like they're a Pac-Man mouth and they just...
Well, they certainly aren't masters.
They just exist generally to devour content, you know?
There's some truth to that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, you know?
We are all consumers. We just consume.
We'll call them players in this case. Yeah.
Players.
Yeah. Enjoyers of gaming content.
Yeah. For us, we just, we realized that, I mean, the value that we place on stuff.
It's not our personal value.
It doesn't matter. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because like, yeah, we may have spent 2 years working on something, but to somebody else, that thing is worth 8 cents, you know, because our time doesn't mean anything. It's the product that means something. Great. Right. So all we do is we just look at comparable things. What are people willing to pay for things that we think are roughly in the same sort of vein as the thing that we made?
Yeah. So with Crashlands, we are, our big points of comparison were basically like Terraria and
Don't Starve.
Mm-hmm. And Don't Starve was selling for $20, I think, at the time. Mm-hmm. Terraria was $10 at the time. And so we're just like, let's just kind of
average that shit
somewhere
out
somewhere in there, you know. but also in general, looking at kind of the broader indie market, because indie games also were kind of priced in that same range. And so we're just looking at the content at those different tiers to just ask, just what kind of stuff is there that has been successful that people have bought a lot of. And so we just saw that at the $15 price point, that tended to be where kind of 2D stuff landed that was also had a lot of content.
Right.
And so that's kind of just then the slot that we decided to go into. And for mobile, it's basically we were trying to have the difference between PC and mobile prices be as narrow as possible. So we just literally said, what's the most that people seem to be willing to spend on a mobile title? And for that, we were looking at, again, Terraria. And again, with comparable titles, we're looking at Terraria.
Minecraft.
Minecraft was a little more expensive, but actually we charge the same as what Minecraft charges now, right? And so we use those as our points of comparison. So really the question is, given things in the market that are similar-ish, what is the market willing to pay for those things? And then you price it accordingly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Piece of cake.
Piece of cake.
No problem. And also, just who cares? You know, as long as you don't dramatically lowball it or dramatically overestimate it.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and you will see that too, especially indies tend to go one way or the other.
Yeah.
They tend to overvalue what they made because they can only think of the work they put into it and what it means to them, not what it means to the consumer. And so they'll overprice it. Or they'll undervalue it because they don't feel good about it and they're scared about selling it. And to them, success just means having people play the game, not have financial success. And so then they'll underprice it. And actually, if you underprice a game, you'll get fewer downloads of it.
Yeah, because price is a metric for people.
It's an indicator of quality.
How good it is.
Yeah, we had that fun event with Crashlands.
Did we talk about it on the podcast?
I don't know if we did, but yeah, we lowered it from 15 to 10 for a while on Steam.
For a couple months, I think.
When we reduced the price, our direct sales numbers went down.
Yeah, by like 20%.
Mm-hmm. So if, just hypothetically, if 500 people were buying it before, now it's 400 people.
Yep.
So
which was the opposite of how we thought.
Right, because you think, oh, economics, demand curve, right? Lower prices, higher demand.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out if price is part of the way that people measure the quality and value of the product,
then that's not true.
A lower price can actually reduce demand.
Right, and we all know that that's true. We've all had that experience when we go to buy a thing. You know, if it's too cheap, we're like, something's wrong with it.
It's kind of like if you order food at a restaurant and it arrives literally instantly, and you're
right.
Something's wrong.
Right.
The numbers don't add up. Just look at what's out there and don't go too crazy with it. Mm-hmm. Our next question comes from Razor 39325. I assume that's their zip code. So if you want to visit them, you can do that. I love listening to your podcasts, and I downloaded them to listen to offline.
Ooh, oh, thanks. Yeah,
on to the question. You talk about ways to be more efficient in life, yet you still play games. How do? I get extremely distracted by games and have a hard time getting anything done when gaming is an option. Some tips, please, for a fan who originally pirated Crashlands, then bought it legitimately. Also, thanks for that. It's good. I mean, not the pirate.
Not the first part, but
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. How fucking dare you? I'm just going to go ahead.
On the first part, but thanks for the second
thanks.
Part.
Thanks. The second part. The first part, no. Second part, yeah, it's good. Let's do that.
Basically, the question is being an efficient person.
How do you be a consumer and a creator?
And a mancer.
And a mancer.
I think I know.
How?
A consumer.
It's mancer. All about being deliberate. It's all about planning.
Mm-hmm.
So
how many hours of video games do you think you play a week nowadays? You seem to be up more.
I've been playing a lot more games lately.
That was one of your resolutions for the year.
Because I basically completely fell off playing games for probably 4 or 5 months toward the end of the last year. So now I'm back on it. So for me, it's basically at the beginning of the day, I lay out my plan for the day and I have my domains of life that I want to make sure that I keep in balance, mm-hmm. right? So I've got creation.
The dark side.
Yeah.
And the light side.
So I've got basically 6 things that I want to make sure that I focus on. So I have creation, which is just making stuff, you know, building games or programming, mm-hmm. whatever. I've got learning, which is making sure I set aside time to read something that I don't know about or whatever. Reflection time. So just journaling, just thinking about stuff. Health. So that's, you know, gym time, mm-hmm. whatever, making sure I eat well. Family, so making sure I spend time with my wife and, mm-hmm. you know, my people. And then the last one is play. Because, like, you can't just fucking work hard all day, every day, and think super hard about everything because you will burn out, mm-hmm. right? And so
I found that I can do it for 2 days.
You can do it.
2 days straight of just, like,
you
work
can't
on
do
shit,
it forever.
And the third day, I'm just like, I'm
just become
done.
A vegetable, right? Yeah. And so really it's about understanding that that actually none of these things are optional. If you want to like be content, where you need to give yourself a break. You need to produce interesting things. You need to give yourself challenges. You need to think about, like, all these things are part of the whole. And so sitting there and saying, like, gaming is not an option. It's something that you enjoy that gives you a break to relax from mm-hmm. the rest of things. So you got to do it. Mm-hmm. You got to go to the gym. You got to play your video games, but you don't overdo it because you got to make sure you set aside time for all these other required things.
I guess right? That's the question is, how do you not overdo it? Is what it sounds like the question is, right?
Yeah.
As a person who plays games, because games are their whole things that they're designed to get you, to grab you by the face,
yeah,
pull you in for hours. So how do you enjoy being grabbed by the face?
Well, it's actually mm-hmm. hard to overdo it if you also make sure that you meet all these other demands. Because once you're meeting all these other demands, then you're fine.
But that's what right? I mean.
Because like, the problem of overdoing it is not the problem isn't that you are playing so many games. It's that you're not doing all the other things. It's not what you are doing. It's what you're not doing. That's the problem.
Right.
So do those things first. Plan your day. Get those things out of the way. And then that's the last thing you do for the day.
Yeah. Only play your games if you've accomplished the other things that you want to accomplish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's it.
And I think a big part of it is actually, so to me, because a big part of the difference between games and real life is that games give you the stepwise goals.
Yeah.
And a ton of feedback. Like Seth was saying, when you can draw a circle and it tells you what percent that circle is good, you will just sit there drawing circles for like 20 minutes in a hypnosis state.
Never before have you had such
feedback.
Perfect feedback on how perfect your circles are.
So I think this is where that idea of the systems development comes in. So for me with the sketching, for any of us when it comes to tackling a new piece of knowledge or whatever else, if it's the case that you're having a hard time not doing things that are games, the big question is why? And my guess would be that if they're not spelled out. So for example, if this idea like, oh, I need to be healthy, what does that mean? Do you have any actual concrete routines that you can step through in the morning when you get up? Do you get up and do you just like do 10 pushups? That's how you start your day. Now I'm going to make my bed. Like, do you have these very concrete things that you can do? Or is it just like do better at blah? Because if that's the case, then you need to treat the rest of your life like it's a video game, which means you need to break out those goals. You need to break out those step-by-step processes so that every day when you get up there, it's easy to step into those processes and then have them just carry you through the rest of the day until it's 4 p.m. and now you're ready to play WoW for 6 hours.
Because you did it.
Because you did all the things. All.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. This is the crazy thing. Like the last couple weeks, like I've been really focusing on these processes and stuff. And I've been simultaneously getting more work done, seeing my friends more, seeing my wife more, learning more, and also playing more games.
Yeah, it turns out when you quit fucking around with all this nonsense activities like perusing Reddit or something, then you just suddenly have all this time. But you have to plan it. You have to plan what you're going to do with it.
Yeah, it's how you're going to make decisions. Mm-hmm. But also, things don't have to be broken up as concretely either. Because for me, most of my play involves programming still.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just
but now it's
experimenting.
It's experimenting. You know, it's stuff where I've now removed the consequences of doing a bad job. You know,
yeah.
Because that's the part that burns me out is like tackling really hard problems where I have no idea what to do, but it really matters that I get it right. You know,
the pressure.
Yeah, because it's that pressure component too. And so having to do because I can dive into one of those problems for days at a time. It's fine, but then I do start to get burnt out, and then I need to go do something else. But that other thing can still be programmed.
Yeah.
So if you can find things that aren't as far apart. As so if like if your work is very, very different than the games that you play, is there something like is there some kind of game that is maybe a little bit closer just conceptually to that so that when you go to make that leap, it's just not as big? Because I think part of it too is when I personally, if I jump from one thing to a very different thing, so say if I like watch Netflix after programming, that jump is so huge that it just really throws me off.
Yeah, you're done.
You're probably. Done now.
Yeah. I can't stop watching Netflix now, right?
Not only can you not go back to programming, you also can't do laundry or can't go to the grocery store. You're done now.
Yeah, some things are just black holes and you just need to avoid those
until you're ready entirely. To just give it.
Yeah, wait until the end of the evening and then before you go to bed, you're like, okay, I'm going to, because I have to sleep. That's the thing that has to happen.
It's a hard gap.
That's the thing that lets you cut that one off. So my strategy has always been just to try to keep things as related as possible so that the jumps just don't feel as big.
One other good question is just to ask, you know, if there is something you're doing or that you need to do during the day, what about it? What angle could you take to make it just more interesting in the first place? So the idea like, I need to mix cocktails for people instead of being like, ugh, then you go buy a tome. And you figure out the difference between bourbon and rye.
This is a perfect opportunity for me to practice my boozemancy.
Yes.
Yeah.
So see if there's anything about it in your day that also has place.
But this is actually, this is the part about this sort of like breaking up your life into the pieces that you know that you need to take care of. So, you know, learning, creation, family, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that those things are separate activities.
Correct.
Right. Right. And so, for example, reflection and health might coincide. If, for example, if you always make it a point to give yourself a really hard problem and then go for a swim or something. Mm-hmm. 'Cause now you can think about it and, mm-hmm. you know, kind of ponder it while you're doing the other thing. Right.
Yeah. We like to go to the gym about two, kind of in the middle of the day when we're a little bit fried from having worked for, you know, 6 hours on hard problems.
Yeah. But you don't
have a good break point.
Yeah. And what I found is actually it's instead of wrapping up what I'm currently doing and then going to the gym, I will start the next thing, then go to the gym.
Get the gears going.
Yeah, that way I have the problem just kind of churning.
Yeah, I think it's important. Don't see your life as a bunch of discrete components that you're sort of like summing together. It's
try
a whole
to find
bunch of
synergies.
Yeah, kind of let it mix together.
Well, so and like in your case, you're talking about basically you have fused the concept of playing and learning, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So for you, when you're building prototypes and learning new skills, that's your opportunity to sort of just have fun with stuff.
Yep.
Right. In a way that doesn't matter, that you're not trying to produce tangible results.
Right.
But it's because you're learning, then you also get to apply that to other things as well. Right. So, yeah. So that's how I think about it. Don't think about gaming as a bad thing or as a thing that's going to consume your time. Because it is something that if it's important to you and it's something that you enjoy doing to unwind, then it does matter as part of your overall life balance. So you just have to make sure that you also understand how it fits and that you hit your other requirements before.
And don't let it interfere with those other things. So because if you're trying to balance, you know, health and playing games, then that means you don't get to stay up until 2 a.m. playing games anymore. Right. That means that there's another rule just in your mind where as you're playing your game, health is still important to you. And so you're always watching that boundary where you start to say, okay, I'm probably going overboard with this. And then you start practicing that self-control where you cut yourself off.
Yeah. And this, I think it's interesting because people always talk about work-life balance, right? But I think that's a weird way to think about life because it implies that there's basically just two things.
It also implies an antagonism.
It implies that there's an antagonism and it implies that there's just two things you got to worry about, work and then literally everything else, right?
Literally everything
else. When really it's more that there's just life balance. Like there's a suite of things that you have to make sure that you keep in balance, but all that really means is that one of them shouldn't consume the rest.
Right.
Right. And that's basically it. Mm-hmm. So, okay. Well, I think that's all the time we have for this week. So we'd like to thank our producer, Fat Bard, for making us sound good. Thanks to our community moderators who keep our Discord and forums running. And as Adam mentioned earlier, we are on a moderator drive.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So if you want to get some fresh blood in there,
because when Levelhead comes out, if it does well, then shit's going to hit the fan. Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't, we need a whole bunch of people to console us as we
we need a team of sort of
grief counselors.
Grief counselors.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tissue bearers.
So where's that application?
You can just find it in the announcement section of Discord.
Announcement section of Discord.
So discord.gg/bscotch.
Yes. Otherwise, if you'd like to adorn your body with butterscotch merch, we do have a merch shop, which is at shop.bscotch.net. We got all kinds of stuff. We got stickers. We got mugs. We got shirts. We don't have underpants. Mm-hmm. That's not
or Cadbury mini eggs.
We don't have mini eggs. We also don't have plushies. We don't have lawnmowers.
We should buy a bunch of mini eggs and then eat them all.
Yeah. And then sell a bunch of merch unrelated.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
All right. Also, if you'd like to send us some stuff, we have a mailbox so you can send us goodies, notes, you know, whatever. And that's over at mailbox.bscotch.net. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Goodbye.
Bye.